Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. A Rich Neighbor Named Xerox, November 1983. When Steve Jobs recruited Microsoft as the first third-party application developer for the Macintosh, he was already concerned that they might try to copy our ideas into a similar user interface for the IBM PC. As a condition of getting an early start on Macintosh development, Steve had Microsoft promise not to ship any software that used a mouse until at least 1 year after the first Macintosh shipped. Neil Conzen, Microsoft's main systems programmer, was assigned to the Mac project. Neil was a brilliant young Apple II hacker who grew up in Microsoft's backyard in the suburbs of Seattle. He started working at Microsoft while he was still a high school student and had single-handedly implemented the system software for their hit Z80 card that allowed the Apple II to run CPM software. Microsoft used a bytecode interpreter environment to write some of their applications, imitating a system used at Xerox that favored memory efficiency over execution speed. This approach was well suited to the Mac with its limited memory. Neil was responsible for integrating this environment with the rapidly evolving Macintosh operating system. By the middle of 1983, Microsoft had made enough progress to show us working prototypes of their spreadsheet and business graphics programs, Multiplan and Chart. They were also working on a word processor, but they neglected to mention that since it would compete with Mac Write. I would usually talk with Neil on the phone a couple of times a week. Sometimes he would request a feature and I would implement it for him, or he would complain about the way something was done. But most of the time, I would answer his questions about the intricacies of the still-evolving Application Programming Interface, or API. I began to notice that Neil often asked questions about details that he didn't really need to know about. In particular, he was really curious about how regions were implemented and would often detail his theories about them to me, hoping for confirmation. Aside from intellectual curiosity, there was no reason for anyone to care about the system internals unless they were trying to implement their own version of the system. I told Steve that I suspected that Microsoft was going to clone the Mac, but he wasn't that worried because he didn't think they were capable of doing a decent implementation, even with the Macintosh as an example. In November 1983, we heard that Microsoft made a surprising announcement at COMDEX, the computer industry's premier trade show. Microsoft had announced a new mouse-based graphical user interface environment called Windows, competing directly with an earlier product announced by Personal Software called VisiOn. When Steve Jobs found out about Windows, he went ballistic. "Get Gates down here immediately," he fumed to Mike Boych, the person in charge of our relationships with third-party developers and the Macintosh's original evangelist. "He needs to explain this, and it better be good. I want him in this room by tomorrow afternoon, or else." And to my surprise, I was invited to a meeting in that conference room the next afternoon, where Bill Gates had somehow manifested, surrounded by 10 Apple employees. I think Steve wanted me there because I had evidence of Neil asking about the Macintosh system internals. The subject never came up, and I remained a fascinated observer as Steve yelled at Bill, asking him why he violated their agreement. "You're ripping us off," Steve shouted, raising his voice higher and higher. "I trusted you, and now you're stealing from us." Bill Gates just stood there, coolly, looking Steve directly in the eye before starting to speak in his squeaky voice. "Well, Steve, I think there's more than one way of looking at it. I think it's more like we both had this rich neighbor named Xerox, and I broke into his house to steal the TV set and found out that you had already stolen it." Unfortunately, it turned out that while the agreement that Microsoft signed in 1981 stipulated that they not ship mouse-based software until 1 year after the Mac introduction, that date ended up being defined in the contract as September of 1983. In late 1981, we thought that the Mac would ship in the fall of 1982 and foolishly didn't let the ship date float in the contract. So, Microsoft was within their rights to announce Windows when they did. Apple still needed Microsoft's applications for the Macintosh, so Steve really couldn't cut them off. Microsoft didn't manage to ship a version of Windows until almost 2 years later, releasing Windows 1.0 in the fall of 1985. It was very crude, just as Steve had predicted, with little of the Mac's thoughtful elegance. It didn't even feature overlapping windows, preferring a simpler technique called tiling. When its utter rejection became apparent a few months later, Bill Gates fired the Windows 1.0 implementation team and started a new project from scratch, led by none other than Neil Conzen. Neil's version of Windows, released a couple of years later, was good enough that Apple filed a monumental copyright lawsuit against Microsoft in 1988. Apple eventually lost on a technicality. The judge ruled that Apple inadvertently gave Microsoft a perpetual license to the Mac user interface in November 1985.